Hello, listeners. This is producer John. Open Pike Night is going to be at Trek Long Island 2024. From May 31st to June 2nd, Cameron and myself, producer John, will be in the Big Apple living long and prospering. We'll be hosting a panel. We'll be giving out stickers. We will have our microphones. Be sure to follow Open Pike on social media and subscribe to openpike.substack.com because we also will be giving away some Trek Long Island weekend passes. Trek Long Island is May 31st to June 2nd at the Hyatt Regency in Hopog, New York. Is this thing on? Hello, hello. Listeners, this is producer John, and this episode is a little bit different. I'll hand it off to Cameron to explain what we're hoping to do with this series, but this is meant to be a watch-along film commentary style, and the movie this week is Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, I think, the ideal format. We were watching Undiscovered Country while having this discussion with Davey, so there's a lot of scene-specific talk, but I think it can also just be listened to as a podcast. I'd say it's probably 50% talking about Undiscovered Country, 50% talking about his writing, specifically Under the Cloak of War. So I think it's a really fascinating conversation we had with him. It's great hearing, you know, this professional writer kind of just geek out and fan out while watching the movie. Like, you don't get those kinds of commentaries on DVDs usually, sometimes.
I thought
it was great. We're going to call it a stream of thought, I think.
Yes, and the reason we're doing that is because we allowed our wonderfully generous patrons into the live stream recording of it with us, so they were able to watch along with us and Davey and talk in the chat. You will hear us reference people in the live chat. If we say the name of a person and you don't recognize that name, assume they were in the live chat or that they were Davey Perez.
Thank you. Yeah. The difference with this really from other episodes is we don't get our call-ins, but that's the call-in is the patrons. You get to come and join and ask their questions straight there. So,
yeah,
you know, if you want to join us, we do hope to have a lot more. Any level of patronage gets you in there. I know Anitra has agreed to do one. I think we've kind of talked about with Bernadette. We mentioned this later with Davey, too, and he gets excited about those as well. So, yeah, listen through, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And don't worry, there. If you are going to watch along with the commentary, we set it up pretty quickly. You'll hear when we tell you to start hit play.
Yeah, there will be a good indicator of when you should actually hit play on your movie. And from what time code or screen? I think we use the screen.
If we use the screen, yep, the Paramount logo. So, without further ado, enjoy our first Stream of Thought episode, watching Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, with writer Davey Perez. Yeah, we got Jen, we got Mark, we got David, we got Michelle. All right.
Welcome, friends.
Folks finding the link now. Perfect. Okay. Well, should we get this thing started?
Yeah. I mean, just a quick introduction. You know, the idea of this is I love listening to creatives talk about their favorite creatives. So we're here with Davey Perez to talk about Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and how it influenced his work in general, and specifically Under the Cloak of War.
Yes. Thank you guys for having me. And as I was saying, I knew when I was writing the episode that the ideas of peace and the ideas of, you know, Klingon human relations with the Federation were huge topics I wanted to tackle. And I remembered this movie, and I did watch it when writing that episode was trying to pull pieces from. Obviously, when we get to the dinner scene, we'll talk about that as well. But, you know, I'm just excited to watch it again. I haven't watched it in about a year because I wanted my reactions to be fresh. I'm going to hopefully be surprised and find some things that I don't remember that I might have stolen.
Yeah, well, you know, I was going to ask you some questions, but I think the movie itself has a long enough opening credit sequence, we could just do it over that.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So welcome to everybody. If you're joining us or popping in, or if you're listening to this afterward, this is our first in the Stream of Thought series with Open Pike Night featuring Davey Perez. And we are going to hit play. We have the video queued up. If you want to get yours queued up, we are on the Paramount logo with the stars all in their semicircle. And we're going to hit play in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I see a bunch of people in the chat saying they saw this movie in the theaters. I did see this one in the theaters as well. And my first movie in the theaters was actually Wrath of Khan.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, for Gene.
I think mine was Jurassic Park.
Oh, that's wow. A good one.
Probably the first like movie six.
I might be a little older than you.
Mine might have been Aladdin. I grew up in a small town. We did not get.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah. Man, I'd have to go pretty far back. I remember seeing this in the theater for sure.
Do you think the pink coloring is for the Klingon blood?
Oh, you know, I never noticed that till you mentioned it. You're probably right. I also
the
love that these
pieces blood.
These opening sequences were just long shots of space, you know, and people were like loving it, right? And it was like,
yeah.
Now you have to have an interactive. You either start your film right away, and you're like, "Oh, what movie am I watching?" Or it's like this weird interactive intro sequence.
Oh yeah.
Or the ones that just tell you the story ahead of time in the opening credits.
Yeah.
Always, that's oh, always yeah. A fun choice.
Are you talking about superhero movies? I feel like you're talking about superhero movies.
There's some others where it's like, man. Oh, what did Michelle say? In my computer class, I chose to write a review for this movie, and I focused on the purple blobs of blood congealing for half the review. She was 9 years
old.
9 years old,
talking about you know, I just had I saw the credits, and I my neighbor, my next door neighbor, actually, is such a small world. He told me. He worked on this movie, and I remember because I saw that Kim Cattrall is in it, and he had all these anecdotes of working on set with her. But he was like a production coordinator back in the day on this movie in particular. And when I told him I was writing for Star Trek Now, he has all these like Star Trek stories, and it's pretty interesting to be like literally right next door to me is like someone who worked in this world.
Hmm. So you'd watch this for preparation for Under the Cloak of War. Do you do that a lot when you're getting into a script? Just watch some other things to inspire you?
Absolutely. I think, you know, stories have templates, and stories are, you know, throughout history, themes repeat themselves, and we're informed by the stories that we've heard and watched. And so whenever I'm writing something, you know, I will read a lot. I will watch a lot of documentaries, and then I'll choose a couple movies that I think I want to sort of like get an influence of how they might have done a thing. You know, this movie in particular, I knew I wanted to have like a big set piece, like a look who's coming to dinner kind of a thing. And I remember this movie has that. And so I just, you know, I watched this specifically for that, and also the Klingon Starfleet relations. But I also read books, some books about Vietnam, books about the war in Afghanistan. Ooh, loud explosion. Really wanted to put some veracity into the script as far as like what it feels like to be, you know, someone who believes in peace but has to fight a war.
Yeah.
Haha, Sulu.
Oh, God, I wish they had done more with Captain Sulu. I'd watch a whole show.
Oh, yeah.
I believe he's got a very short trek coming up.
Oh.
Ah. David Jones asks, if Ricardo Montalban and Christopher Plummer swapped roles, could they have done the same performances but as different roles?
Wow.
Oh, I can see that.
If Plummer was Khan?
Yeah.
And if probably. Yeah.
Montalban was Chang?
Charismatic yeah. Villain? Yeah.
Yeah.
What is this? Oh.
I feel like we might take Khan slightly less seriously, but
what are you talking about, Plummer? Plummer's great.
I just, but like, at the, there's so much screaming that I feel like it only works because it's Montalban. But
yeah, because of the accent.
Does Plummer have the chest? I mean, the chest is half the performance.
That's a real question, right?
Yeah.
What is this Nexus?
I don't know. Was he ever shirtless in The Sound of Music? Have we ever seen him? younger and shirtless.
This is classic. What I love about this sequence here, like immediately the ship's in danger. Like this is just classic, like a teaser basically, but they're doing it for the movie, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
like it's an episode, like something's got to happen. You got to be invested right away. And you know, it's like at this point in their Trek writing, they like knew how to really make the most of their, you know, sci-fi premises and their characters.
I mean, they literally start with an explosion.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And it seems like they knew, like, well, people will just watch Captain Sulu doing whatever. Let's have him going through a giant explosion and, like, let's make it interesting at least. Like, drinking tea to a huge ship-rattling moon blowing up.
I love that Sulu got a moment to, like, show his piloting chops where he, like, tells his pilot how to survive the wave, basically. Yeah. Like, that's a nice little touch.
Let's not forget Rand, the little Rand. You know, little Janice Rand pop there.
Yep.
She's like, take me to your ship, Sulu. I cannot do the Enterprise anymore.
I can't get coffee for the guys anymore.
I like that visualization. If this planet were a circle, this is what that would look like.
Praxis. You know, it's funny. I remember
like Spock and Children of the Comic. Sorry.
Go at one point, I was going to try to have Jigal fall apart like Praxis, because there was a line in was for the High Command. He's lying. Anyway, so I wanted to have the moon falling apart because someone had said if you were on Jigal, you wouldn't have survived. But then it became too big of a story, like the story of moon falling apart on top of a war, on top of a... So, you know, a lot of finding under the cloak of war was just, what's the most simple story here? What's the most human story? What's the most, like, you know, immediate thing we're dealing with?
But if it were a two-parter...
Hey, you know.
I mean, you tell a lot of story in Under the Cloak of War, for sure. And you had said you would watch MASH specifically, because it's MASH. It's a medical unit. But also how you tell that war story in 20 minutes, basically.
That's why I watched MASH, because they did it so well. You know, they really found a way to touch on the complexity of war, but entertain you and make you laugh, but then also get you to invest. And I was watching, MASH was on in the background, or like, I would go to bed and it would be there. And I'm pretty sure I stole some plot line, you know, the kid that you have to convince to go back out there. And then he comes back, in a body bag, you know, that's a trope, but you know, we get to do it Starfleet's way. Mm-hmm. I hope was effective, you know, and wanted to focus it on sort of making Babs sort of Hawkeye and him being at the front line, but Hawkeye, who's also, you know, a Black Ops badass.
Yeah.
We had a combat veteran on for our coverage of that episode, and he said, you nailed it. Like, really, really liked the episode. He said the tone was perfect. So
that's huge compliment. Yeah. I've heard that from a lot of, chatter online and people messaging me, and I think the reason for that again is I read a biography of I think it's Dakota Meyer, who was in Afghanistan, and that book is very harrowing. I read the things they carried about Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I watched some documentaries on PTSD, and I actually also have a friend who's a combat veteran and also a writer, and I had him read the script and just sort of give me his honest reactions. And I got a lot of little idioms from him, and a lot of, you know, he told me kind of where to pull back on some stuff, because as writers we have our ideas of something, and you know. Sorry, I know I'm talking about the episode, but I just love, you know, here's a great scene about the different perspectives of the Federation on Klingons, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I definitely tapped into for the episode as well. Is like, you really want to show that it's not a black and white situation, right? Like, peace is not a black and white situation. Peace is complex, and I actually don't think we've really nailed it even in our real world. Mm-hmm. And so you have to honor and accept that everyone's going to have a specific point of view, you know. Yeah. And then, you know, here Spock is obviously arguing for the better road, right? He's arguing for the you know, let's help this enemy and let's try to think of the greater good. But having everyone react to that, especially Kirk, who feels betrayed, that now that's again, it's like this person that I know is my friend, who I've just spent two movies bringing him back from the Genesis planet and bringing him back to himself, is now saying we got to go help the people who I hate the most. Mm-hmm. You know, and so a lot of those early scenes of my episode were about the people that you love and that you serve with, you disagree with because they have a different perception of things.
Well, and as an audience member, much like in your script, you know, we're seeing two of the most beloved television characters of all time on either sides of this issue. You know, we're seeing Kirk say, no, let them die. And that's Kirk. We love Kirk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, right. When I was watching that earlier, I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds like Mbanga with I'm glad he's dead. Mm-hmm. Like that definitely reminded me. Jesse from Alaska over on YouTube says in Under the Cloak of War, she actually wanted to see more of the war stuff. And it was interesting because we don't really see so much in the trenches war on Star Trek. In fact, we've seen very little of it for as much Star Trek as there's been.
Well, yeah, and that was something I wanted to really show. I've watched a lot of Trek where they talk about war, they talk about peace treaty, they talk about the Klingon War, they talk about the Romulan War, and it's all very abstract and it's not visceral. And so I wanted to write, and the writers with me wanted to. Oh, sorry, but this is a good scene. I know Kirk versus Spock, like,
yeah.
Let them die. Like
two good friends who just don't see eye to eye, you know. And the hatred that Kirk has is from a real place because, you know, I see it. Yes, it's all about David Marcus clearly in the film, but I also know that, you know, for me in my watching of the original series, he has had a lot of interactions with the Klingon. He has had a lot of loss with the Klingons, and sort of going back to. What I was saying about the visceral nature of war, it turns peaceful people into animals, you know, and then you hate yourself for what you become, you know what I mean? And so you're, it's a very complex, you know, self-loathing, in a weird way that you have in common with your enemy almost.
Mm-hmm.
And you get almost that entire dichotomy just in Mbenga. In Under the Cloak, because he is a healer,
yeah.
And then he comes back to the other side of that, like, but if I don't need to be, then I won't be.
Exactly. And what I liked about what we decided to do with Mbenga specifically there was, like, we didn't tell an origin story per se. Like, he was already, like, he comes with this baggage that we hint at. Like, he was, you know, embedded with some sort of, you know, unit that was special ops, and he was probably like a specialist who was, you know, yeah, he was the medic in that specialist group, but he was in there, right? And then after that experience, he decides, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to go full bore as a doctor. And that's a story, and that's an interesting story, but where we wanted to talk about the complexities of, you know, belief and peace and belief and the moral nature of where we are in the journey, we just sort of said, let's not do an origin story. Let's just pick it up. Much like we have these characters that we love and have this history that's existing, let's just pick up Mbenga there in the middle of it, you know, and yeah. at an inflection point where, you know, things got darker for him.
Yeah, I don't know how much of this is written in his backstory, but, you know, in season one, I always imagine his wife had maybe died, and that's why Rikia was with him. But because of Under the Cloak of War and some of the lines there, I'm like, maybe not. Maybe it was this experience here that broke up the family and that's why he's not in a marriage anymore.
I mean, you know, there's so many years ahead of us before we get to this era, right. So there's a lot to tell. And there's the shot of David, you know.
Yeah.
I can never forgive him for the death of my boy. And this is a great reminder of what's at stake here. The personal feeling that he has, much like Mbenga, I have the personal connection to the hatred of Doc Raw versus the ideals of what I signed up for, which is Starfleet trying to bring peace to the galaxy.
Yeah. And with Valeris correcting Kirk on the bridge, I mean, man, she's been a real Samantha there, am I right?
There it is.
Nice. Someone had to, right? Someone had to.
Why does he have a picture of orcas on his wall?
Well, he just came back from the voyage home.
Where's the humpbacks? It wasn't Free Willy.
Kirk is a broad strokes kind of guy.
He doesn't know what... Yes, he saw Spock swimming with him.
Yeah, I
he told some yeoman, get me a picture of whales.
And yes.
Like, all right, here you go. That's funny. Jennifer, why doesn't the door close automatically? Because they needed this scene.
I do want to take a quick moment just to appreciate William Shatner's ability to espouse exposition in such a engaging way. Like, the man, just he can do it. Like, earlier he's talking about where Sulu is, and it's just like, he just throws it off so casually and makes it feel so Kirky.
Yeah, that's a talent, right? Sometimes you got to lay the pipe, and it can be clunky, but in the hands of a talented, you know, I think he was, you know, Shakespeareanly trained. That's not a word, but it's close to one. he pulls it off, and I think Anson does that a lot for us. And all of our actors, our whole cast is amazing, right? And sometimes you dump them with, like, you know, well, you got to say these four words, otherwise we have no idea where we are, and they're like, cool, I got it, you know.
I believe Kim Cattrall was also in Crossroads with Anson Mount and Zoe Saldana, also Star Trek fame.
It's all
nice connection.
We are all in the Crossroads universe.
Yeah.
I was going to say Mannequin too, but I don't know the connection there, the Star Trek connection.
Yeah. So all these conversations about peace and faith, and it's, you know, watching it here, I'm like, oh, I totally cribbed some of this. Like, you know, you get two people with the poison points of view dissecting your theme, you know, and you can have some great scenes that are like basically just a conflict of not seeing eye to eye, you know, and it's just, and to your point about exposition, it's a great fervent ground to then get out exposition, because now you have a scene about conflict, but all the details come from what's happening, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, what I liked watching this after Under the Cloak of War is thinking, like, and I mean, this applies more to later in the film, but Spock was around during the last time a Klingon ambassador was killed while being protected by the Enterprise. So, like, maybe when he's, like, desperately trying to solve the mystery later, like, maybe he's thinking back to that time, like, I didn't get to the bottom of it last time. This time.
Yeah, he's like, I let Mabenga slide. Yeah. You know, I got to make sure Kirk is innocent, you know.
That's right.
But no, you bring up a very valid and good point here, is that I was very conscious of who, like, Uhura is also here. You know, who's at that dinner and what is their experience? Where are they at their journey? Like, Spock is obviously, this is not his first dinner with Klingons. Under the Cloak of War is his first dinner with a Klingon. And there he is trying to figure out, how do I interact, make the guy rack the chino, you know, quote some obscure stuff. Like, what is the, you know, how can I connect with someone? And here, you know, watching this, as I do when I'm writing all the characters for, you know, Strange New Worlds, I'm trying to sort of tap into, if this is who they become, where are they right now? Like, where are they back at in the era that we get to play in, you know, 10, you know, at this point, 20 years, you know, we're 20 years before this event, right? And what is that young Spock, you know, process? Ooh, Kronos won, Gorkon.
Yes. He was a human in the last movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was so good, they brought him back.
And then brought him back again. Yeah. David Warner dined out on Star Trek money for a long time, that's for sure.
So I saw an interview where he referred to as the torture of Picard episode, a Chain of Command, right? Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
He referred to it as a makeup job. And I was like, man. Like, to be that level, right? Like,
yeah, one of the greatest sort of people. Yeah, he's like, it was like a carnival act, you know.
Yeah, it's just like, and he just nailed it anyway.
Yeah. Oh, Michelle brought up a good point. Like, Spock being ambassador to Klingons is interesting because his sister basically started the war.
The Klingons started the war, Michelle. It wasn't Michael.
Yeah.
I also like that then in a few, well, 80 more years, he tries to get peace with the Romulans. Like, that's just his mission at this point.
Yeah, you got to give it to the guy, right? You know, he's just on. Even though, you know, spoiler, Kim Cattrall's the Romulan spy, you know, he's up. Oh, there's the bosun's whistle. Yeah. I for sure I didn't have to tell them to watch it because props knew immediately. I was like, I want the bosun's whistle. It's in there, please.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey Combs and Stranger World. You're getting into my sweet spot with that one.
Yes.
I mean, here I'll get back to Jeffrey Combs, but I do want to tag that this, you know, tilt up to the, you know, the transporting in, you know, the vibe, the grim vibe of like your enemy is on your ship,
mm-hmm.
was really like, for me, I was like, you know, wanted to channel that as much as possible in that first moment of Doc Rock coming on board.
Mm-hmm.
And then his charisma and his sort of like, I'm trying to, you know, it's a good scene here.
I think you guys layered that really well with Pike's narration over the start of it, because I was like, who is it? Who could it possibly... Yeah. Are they talking about a Troy? Are they talking... Oh, a Klingon.
Yeah. General Chang. Here he is. The man himself. To meet you,
see,
Captain.
Sometimes Klingons don't have hair, Discovery haters.
Yeah. Right.
He's got a little ponytail there.
Yeah, so like the tension here, I was hoping to really channel that like later for like in Under the Cloak of War when Doc Roth finds out about M'Benga, like, oh, you were on the planet, you're like a warrior. Mm-hmm. And even though Doc Roth is like, I'm all about peace right now, there's this piece of him that's like, let's go spar. Like, I'm interested in you. I'm interested. You're the face of my enemy. You are the face that when I think of my enemy, you're the face I think of. And so I want to get to know you a little bit.
This little sequence is so good. This just how it sets up everything without just making any big deal of it.
Yeah.
Are they the assassins?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. On second watch, spoiler, these are the guys that do. And Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah, spoiler for our Star Trek fans.
For our Star Trek fans. They kill that guy. I love Jeffrey Combs. I'm a big Stuart Gordon fan. And so I love Jeffrey Combs for... all of the From Beyond, you know, everything. And so I'm constantly mentioning his name. This sequence here, like, you know, again, they're playing the Klingons for laughs a little bit. But you do get to Gorkon, and he is more refined, and he is more trying to put on the trappings of making the humans comfortable. And so I was like, that's what I want for Doc Roth, right? And you know, talking with Henry in the writer's room too, like, we really wanted Doc Roth to be this charismatic, like, more human than the humans, you know what I mean? Like, he, in writing him, and whether he is, here we go, quoting Shakespeare, yeah.
I love that they redress the TNG conference room so much for this movie. They feature this room a ton because they're like, we put a lot of work into that.
Yeah.
So,
anyone else bring their Romulan ale with them tonight?
Yeah. Sorry, I like brain farted. I was saying something about I just love this scene though, because I ripped. Give up Starfleet. He's like, don't talk for me, Spock. Yeah. Like, this conversation about peace and the nature of Starfleet and why we do what we do. Yeah.
It's a pretty direct call out just to say Cold Warriors.
Yeah. Yeah, we're full on talking about the Russian Cold War at this point with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
This scene in particular was the humanism and the racism I loved, and I really was hoping to tap into that kind of tension with Doc Ron. So that's why in writing him, and we discussed this in the room a lot, it was, or not to be, he wanted the Klingon to appreciate humans more than the humans do. Right. Even with the way they're that line, the Kirk's line about Hitler. Great. He's like not willing to let go of the tension. Right. And that was a little bit of like what Ortegas did for me in Under the Cloak of War. It's like, other people are trying to cool it off, and she's kind of being Kirk and bringing it back up a little bit, or Chang.
Ortegas definitely has some Kirk vibes.
Oh, I could almost see her in a monster maroon during that scene.
Oh, like, yeah. Trek definitely has a thing for Shakespeare. So, like, Gorkon is sincere, right? And that's what we wanted for Doc Roth. Like, he believes his own, you know, perspective on things. And whether what he struggles with is the fact that he's lying about one fundamental thing about himself. But beyond that, he believes in this quest for peace. And here, you know, Chang sort of thinks peace is bullshit, you know, and which is a fun, like they have. And because of that, he gets to pick at Kirk. He gets to pick at him in an interesting kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool shot.
Yeah.
Out from in front of the rest of the frame.
So this line from Uhura, I struggled a little bit because I was like, here she's grossed out by the Klingons, right? So, but then I was like, you know what? Maybe it makes sense because the first time she had dinner with a Klingon, he was very refined and he was, you know, drinking our wine and now I got to see them eat, you know, Krav Mach or whatever, and is that the way you say that? The worms, the plate of worms?
Gach.
Gach, there you go. Why am I I'm mixing my Klingon? So I'm not a very good Klingon speaker.
The
Chancellor's Cane is awesome, Jennifer, and I wanted that for our Doc Rob, but we got a smaller, more TV version of it.
Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, he did have a cane. Yeah. That was a good touch. I also really liked how you made Uhura, and I said this in our review of the episode, how you made her the sort of wide-eyed believer in just taking everything at face value in the episode. It used her very well that way.
Well, that was the point. Yeah, it's like we needed to have everyone's perspectives on it from both sides. And so there was a clear delineation of the combat veterans. And even among the combat veterans, their specific point of view on the Klingons. And then the people who weren't there and their sort of, you know, I guess logical or studious point of view on it. You know, it's the ideals, and neither are wrong. You know, that's what's great is if you can give everybody a strong point of view and you can kind of see both sides, like that's when the conversation happens, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Boom.
I love the tonal shifts in this movie because we just went from like political drama to now we're like in the thriller stage.
Yeah, so action. It's gonna
be a mystery, and then you get like the planet hopping and aliens later. They really do wrap it all up into like a cohesive narrative.
Yeah, this is like where you would cut to the moon, now go to the action sequence. Jesse, that's what I meant, thank you. It's a worm dish. That's a trap. Wrong franchise. That's a saber tooth bone. No, I don't know what that's from.
The big animal.
Yeah. We lost gravity.
It's an Usyk. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. We did actually have, Usyk. You know, I know the pink blood's about to show up, but we did have a lot of conversations about.
I was going to ask.
It was, look, we had meetings about the blood. we looked at different shades of it. And ultimately, I don't think I got to establish it because it was, we saw Klingon blood in the Broken Circle, which was the premiere. Hmm. And so we said, we'd just let's track within our own universe what it looks like. And, you know, but can we pink it up just a bit? you didn't want it to be, you didn't want it to pull you out of the grim nature of the story, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, we all love the pink blood. Fine, Chang.
Yeah. I mean, I'm watching TNG for the first time and was shocked when we saw red Klingon blood. Like, I've always associated Klingon blood with pink, but I think this is the only instance of it, right?
It's a ratings thing too, right? Is why they,
that's why they did it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's all like when you look up the reasons for some of these decisions, you're like, that is not, you know, creative.
Fine, for ratings, we'll make it Pink Blood, and like Pink Blood right. is what's stuck in the mind of every 12-year-old who watches.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, even in this action sequence, what's cool is like, so you're getting all this information and you're like seeing it, but the context of it is, you know, you have to take it at face value, which is a little bit of under the cloak of war, right? It's like, we're showing it to you. It's all right there. You know, it's the we're fighting a ground war, and you know, Mbenga's a doctor, but then the context of it starts to unravel later, and also who Doc Raw is. And I mean, we don't have moon booted guys come through, but you do see flashes of like what you think is a Klingon warrior killing other Klingon warriors, mm-hmm. and then later is it revealed, spoiler, you know, Mbenga is the butcher of Jigal.
Mm, yeah.
Even that name was very Shakespearean, I have to admit. It's like actually, it's the Barber of Seville was in my head every time. You know, I'm the butcher of Jigal. It's like a very, like, you know, classic Renaissance theme. It's operatic, you know.
Yeah. Klingon operatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, the ship's spinning. That's why the gravity's all weird throughout that whole sequence.
As happens on a spinning bird of prey, or yep. was that a battle cruiser? I don't remember.
Have there been any gravity discussions in the Strange New Worlds writer rooms?
Ask that again.
Gravity questions. It's not something that gets brought up a lot in Star Trek. Like Enterprise had one scene, I think.
Yeah, no, we don't. We avoid to any science that'll out that some things don't make sense. You know, but there was gravity. There was an anti-gravity sequence in the there's Chang selling it. Yeah.
That bully out of the stars. Such a good line.
Plumber on Shatner.
I feel like Chang's done some Shakespeare acting, maybe back in college.
Yeah.
Took a drama course.
He was a theater kid.
Yeah. Everybody would love a Young Chang series, I'm sure.
Oh, of course, yeah. Everybody Young Chang tonight.
I wish there was a TV show that would be contemporaneous with Chang's career that he could appear on. Wait a minute.
What?
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, it would be interesting to see why Chang hates Kirk so much. There is, right? Because there's a story there. Like, immediately, you know, and you know, it's like, obviously, we tell the story in Under the Cloak of War, but like, Mbenga sees Doc Ron, and he's like, you know, he fucking hates that guy, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And we get to unpack it. Chang is just like fucking does not
from
like
the get
Kirk.
Go. Yeah.
I want to say, in my head canon, I'm going to say Chang is like Krug's brother. Or
I was
going to
say,
like that,
yeah,
you know
right.
I mean?
Yeah, I love that. Like Kirk wronged him in some way and just has no idea.
No clue, right? Yeah. He's just like, why, this guy with all the one-liners. What's his deal?
Yeah,
setting me up for assassination.
He hit Chang's targ with the Enterprise.
Yeah.
He's tossing me like lifelong enemy level one-liners, and I have no idea who he is. I'm very embarrassed.
Kirk stole his girl.
Yeah. McCoy, yeah.
I love McCoy.
I think right here he has like a line where he doesn't even know how to really operate on them, or he's like, I don't know where his...
Yeah.
And with Mbenga, we wanted to set up, I don't know if it stayed in there, but there's this subtext that he actually... Kirk stole his girl. I love it. That Mbenga could operate on a Klingon if he needed to. Like, he knows, but that's what makes him an effective killer, is that he actually knows where all the vitals of a Klingon are. He knows how to really... If he had to sew one up, he could. And if you needed to assassinate one, he definitely could.
I think he did some maintenance on one in the Broken Circle, or a couple of them.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where it was. I knew that we sort of was were like, you wanted to let you know that this guy knows Klingon anatomy, and maybe not for the reasons that he should.
Yeah, that's a good point, Michelle. Even by the time TNG comes around, Crusher has similar issues, just no familiarity with Klingon physiology.
I think... You probably needed to go to Klingon assassin school to get that knowledge.
Yep.
And,
the only way.
And they didn't. That was not their prerequisite for their doctorates. Crusher, always crush on the Crusher.
Heck yeah.
There's that Pink Blood.
Oh my
the
goodness.
Pepto.
Yeah.
The slight wavering is too much motion.
Yeah. Yes. Get some more Pepto in there. The big chest wound, the big stomach wound, a little callback in the Under the Cloak of War with Alvarado.
Yeah.
You almost got like a shot of Chang being worried there that they would be able to save.
Yeah, him, like
flash across his eyes.
There he goes.
Love him.
They're going into that gold country doctor. Go ahead. Chang's like, fuck, what if he starts breathing again?
Don't do the second heart. Don't do the second heart.
Yeah. This guy doesn't know about the second valve.
There we go. Get some medical punches in there. Yeah.
That's some classic, you know.
It's like the abyss here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The 80s were all about just bringing people back to life by hitting them as hard as you could.
Work on.
Punching people to life.
He says something to Kirk. I know it was you, Fredo. Yeah. We almost gave Doc Raw a final line in that way, but it was cleaner to not know and just see him die.
Yeah.
What would the line have been?
I know it was you, Fredo. Exactly. What would the line have been, right? There was no line to be had at that point. But yeah. It was like, you know.
Fucking Mbenga.
Fucking Mbenga. He did it. Chang's like, arrest these fools. They were waiting with those cuffs.
Yeah.
And now we're going to get into the part of the movie that has nothing to do with my episode, but it's still fun to watch.
This is where we get Worf.
The Kamaloid. Yeah. Well, actually, no, the court martial or the trial of Kirk, I imagine what it must have been like after they got their hands on Doc Raw, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and Mbenga even makes it a point. Like, they didn't do it. They didn't put him on trial at all. They got a hold of him, and he's like, I'm defecting, and I just killed my men, and I want to help the Federation. And you have to think, like, whatever Admiral, you know, was hearing all of this, or whatever, you know, Starfleet person, they basically say, cool, I'm just going to accept this story at its face value and not try you for war crimes and just sort of quietly tap into your knowledge and then, you know, all of a sudden 2 years later you're working for us.
Mm-hmm.
Much like you know, Von Braun and the NASA program and all these other, you know, Nazi war criminals that should have gone on trial for their part in that atrocity, but they were too valuable as intellectuals to jail. Yep, there he is. He waited two movies to come back and put Kirk on trial.
Yeah.
Oh, is he in Search for Spock?
He was in Voyage Home.
Boy, that's it, yeah.
And he was I want this guy to call him a dumbass.
Right? Foreman.
Red
We're
Foreman.
All waiting for it.
Dumbass.
Or a line from RoboCop. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah. I like it. That wasn't his line, but
what species is the president?
That's what I'm. It's not a Klingon, right?
No, he's not Klingon.
I'm so confused.
Isn't he an look it up. Aetherian?
But he looks very similar.
Oh, hey, it's that Romulan commander guy.
Yeah. Yeah, was it you, Jesse, who was wondering if that was the Vulcan lawyer from episode 2?
That was me, yeah.
I could totally see it, though, yeah.
He looks like he should be in suits. So this conversation, too, like, what do we do about the situation? Who's valuable? Who do we throw under the bus? Like, I was just picturing these as backroom conversations that set up sort of Doc Raw's, you know, backstory a little bit, where you have the Federation high ups essentially deciding what do we do and who do we throw under. And Kirk's going to go on trial, but Doc Raw got to sidestep that. And that Klingon was in the beginning of Voyage Home calling Kirk a terrorist. And, you know, he did this and that. And I think I did pull a little of like people's perspective. He's the, you know, the siege at Lambetta 5. And I wanted Doc Raw. Like, whatever Klingons think of Kirk, I wanted our Starfleet people to think of as Doc Raw's. Like, that guy is a fucking son of a bitch.
Yeah. He's in a Frosian, is the president's race.
All right.
Oh, that sounds like a very refreshing drink.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll have an Frosian, please.
Frosian, lemon lime.
Sounds like the new store that opened up in the mall.
Red Foreman.
There's his Morpheus glasses.
No, sure.
Take the red pill.
They should call him Blue Foreman.
Love her chainmail hat.
Just remember, Michelle, at some point, canonically, Uhura's entire brain gets, like, reverted to the age of a child temporarily, so that might be why she doesn't translate so well here as compared to Strange New Worlds.
I've seen that brought up, yeah. These Klingons speak a different dialect than she's used to.
There's so many Klingon dialects out there. If you got the ridge forehead or not the ridge forehead, if you got the big Brian Fuller bumps, you know, who knows?
They had fun with new technology in this movie with the holograms and the lasers and then the all CGI kinds of blood, stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
CGI
yeah, yeah.
blood.
This
CGI
is like
planet.
Arcade games were like up in their game.
Mm-hmm.
Better to die on our feet than to live on our knees. Yeah, so here you have like the quintessential Klingon, you know, point of view, right? The way that, you know, war is a way of life. And so understanding that about Klingons really makes Gorkon and Dakra an oddity, right? Because they're the antithesis of what a Klingon should be doing in this era, you know what I mean, as far as...
Mm-hmm.
Remember that shot from the trailer.
Sure. That was a shot made for the trailer.
Kirk.
They're really on his side, man.
He's like, Spock, I think they love me.
Yeah. Yeah, he's killed like all of their brothers.
Yeah, he's like, true. How many battle cruisers has Kirk put down? He's just like, they're like, F this guy. There he is. Michael Dorn.
Yeah.
Talk about a timeless look, man. He does not age.
I was just watching DS9 yesterday, and they have a little ball for their trial, too. But it doesn't spark.
Yeah, when we write Uhura, we write Uhura as a contemporary. That, you know, we write her as the genius that she is, the linguistic sort of, you know, having all her faculties and... But even in her translation of their war chant is actually a very, there he is. I was there. I lost my arm. is a very literal translation of like, if you were like book Spanish, if you were like, oh, that's what it would say. And then it's Ortegas who was like in the shit having to say, well, you know, when they say that, what they really mean is this, you know, remain Klingon. And it's also like, you know, you could say, you know, we are Klingon, we may endure, but if you're shouting it over comms to like demoralize your enemy, remain Klingon is a lot easier to shout, you know.
I love how like this is the number one viewed show in the galaxy right now.
Yeah.
Everyone's just tuning into this trial.
This is the OJ trial of the time.
Like, these guys must have been so sick of holding up that prop for so long for so many takes. Like,
they're like, where's the subdermal translators?
Start hitting their heads.
Yeah. You know, again, it's like details, right? Like the details of events, how we get them, how we can twist them, you know.
I love... McCoy's like, I'm getting too old for this shit attitude this whole time.
Yeah.
I was just about to retire.
Yep.
Right. I'm just about to retire. And he's called him out. You drunk, Romulan ale?
I didn't even want a cell phone.
I can't get a signal.
Yeah, it gave some guy in the past some pills and saved his liver.
Ah, you were there. So was I.
I like that he's a little bit English and a little bit Southern. You say you are due for retirement.
I'm just a Southern Klingon doctor or a Southern Klingon lawyer. It was an old lady. That's hilarious.
He brought a dude to hold his cloak. I mean, come on. Showboat.
That's a power move.
That's...
Yep.
Yeah. I tried to save him.
I believe him.
They should play that clip from Search for Spock where Kirk goes, "You Klingon bastard! You killed my son!" Klingon! That's just right there. Guilty.
How did you get that transmission?
We rented it from Blockbuster.
They cut McCoy where it hurts on his medical professionalism. It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, peace is cool, but like, do not question me.
Right. James Tiberius Kirk.
Why didn't they make those little walkie-talkies like a toy you could buy?
Yeah. Watching this again, I think he's a doctor, not a diplomat, damn it. A lot of these scenes are like, they're like duels, right? They're like dueling with lines. And I think there was a piece of this that I think I probably channeled was to like, you know, worst as the assassin, you know, they're still in combat, but it's all words, mm-hmm. you know, but there's their way they move, like the way Chang and Kirk look at each other is like, they're still on a battlefield. It's just now the battlefield is his courtroom, you know? And I think Mbenga and Doc Ra have that like, oh, you were on Jagal and you were also, you're my, you know, we're in a battlefield, but now I'm fighting for peace and I don't know what you're fighting for. And this battle room has become this dinner. You know what I mean?
Their photon torpedoes are truth bombs.
Yeah, exactly. Set my truth bomb to stun.
Federation president's like, really, Kirk? You said that into a log? Wow.
Well, and Sulu spilled the tea at the beginning. So, I mean, come on, the whole crew's in on it.
Jennifer did correct me that it was an old lady who grew a new kidney with the pills that McCoy gave
her. That's right.
Gotta be. Don't at me. It has been corrected.
At him. Everybody. Yeah. At him now.
Green shirt 87 on Twitter.
Yeah. All he's got to do is call him churlish. Whenever it suits him.
Chang would be an awesome cosplay to go to a con in.
Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hot. Yeah. So hot.
Yeah.
Cold weather con for sure.
Yeah, Chang's angry, and it's righteous anger because what he's pointing out is true. Like, Kirk has done some shit that any other person would have to be held accountable for, but because he's so valuable and he's so gets it done that people turn the other way. Do you know what I mean? I mean, obviously, Chan has done some, you know, nefarious shit, but the point he's making isn't wrong. And I think it's probably what leads to the guilty verdict.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right there. The heart of the matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor Ancestor Worf is way in over his head.
So are we saying that's Moog's dad or Moog's grandpa?
I don't know. He's the public defender at this point. He's like, yeah. I just got out of college, guys.
Wait, is that little Velcro thing on Kirk's shoulder, is that the tracking beacon Spock put there?
That's his rank insignia, Cameron.
On the back of his shoulder, there's like a little foam.
Oh, like he just pat his back and like, oh, no one pay attention to this Velcro patch that says find Kirk now.
You can even see it from here.
No, I think that's the other side of his insignia.
Okay.
Oh, I think someone was tracking it. I think you're right. I think it is the very obvious tracker that everyone's supposed to ignore.
Yeah.
Very lucky they let them keep their uniforms when they sent them to the prison colony.
See, that's an interesting point he makes too, because, you know, he's the captain, and so, you know, Pike is the captain of the Enterprise currently, so he is also ultimately responsible for the actions or inactions of his own crew as well.
Yeah, you can kind of see the recognition on Kirk's face, realizing he is guilty there almost.
Now, this Klingon judge has got to be the inspiration for the monks of Boreth. Like, that looks exactly like...
Oh,
I love the subtle lighting of the crowd in these shots,
right,
where only the chancellor's daughter is lit.
Mm-hmm. Just stone-faced, holding their walkie-talkies.
Yep.
They want them to see the faces of the family members of the person they murdered.
Commuted. Now they're pissed. Kill this guy. Chang didn't like that.
I'm glad they didn't just put the Worf makeup on him and like different hair color. Like, he looks different. Like, he looks like a different person.
Enough, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What's the ZZ Top Klingon saying? What's he? I lit the mines on the penal asteroid of Rurapenthe.
You chose poorly.
Yeah. You shall not pass. Wait a sec.
That judge has seen Breakfast Club.
He does look like the bridge keeper, you're right.
I love this just total bridge exposition right here.
Yeah. Now we know how bad Rupert is.
Yeah.
All of them
everybody
us,
knows.
Right?
Yep.
Also, just like Scotty groin shot here.
Yeah. Nicholas Meyer directed. Why am I throwing him under the bus like
you know? And then Davey never ended up working with Nicholas Meyer. It was so
he's
weird.
Gonna be like, I heard what you said on that podcast, you fucking punk. I'm like, sorry, Nick,
I only do 20% more groin shots than other directors.
Yeah. It is Enterprise. It was not another Wessel.
I love how just indignant Scotty gets about things like this.
Yeah, he's like, he's just like, it's in a personal affront to him.
I fucking counted their torpedoes, okay?
It's the parallel to McCoy's professionalism being questioned.
Yeah. He's still salty over banging his head and getting knocked out in the last movie.
Bonk. Dennis Nedry style, too, like, full on.
Just buy another chip. Again, all this like detective work without clues. Just love it. Mm. Classic, like classic TV Trek or any kind of procedural Trek where you're just like, everyone is so smart. They can just figure it out with like the script of like the scrap of one clue. Right.
Mm-hmm. I have a working theory. Let's just assume it's right.
Let's just assume it's correct. Okay. And then it turns out to be correct.
Oh, did we miss the part where Spock says he's related to the Holmes writer?
Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah, apparently. Amanda's a distant relation.
Spock's like, you think that's weird?
Yeah.
My old CMO actually killed a Klingon hand-to-hand combat just tonight.
You guys think this is fucked.
Yeah, call Dr. Chapel. Yeah. She's the only one
who
knows what actually happened.
You know the doctor used to kind of have hanging around and just came out to slap me around a couple times? He's got some stories. it is good to have Scotty in our universe now.
Yeah.
Her with the lean. The leg
up. He's great.
He's doing the Riker before Riker.
Yeah.
Wessel. There it is.
Some of that 3D space combat coming back to haunt Kirk in this movie.
Yeah. Mm.
Good point.
It's funny. I'm listening to this. This is like a scene I would have written in Supernatural. Like when the brothers are like, I went to the library. I downloaded some articles. And then you just work it all out. Give the audience with the as much as they needed. And then go on to the next cool thing you're going to do. Yep. It is a good scene, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, it does take you on that journey based on everyone's proficiency and their expertise, and everyone. It's you know, they break up the exposition because every one of them gives a piece versus like I'm the one, you know, smartest person in the room that has everything.
Right.
Oh yeah, here we go, Rurapenthe. That guy's done already. Where's Iman? She's gonna show up soon.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I think I failed, is I didn't get a Kamaloid in Under the Cloak of War.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know.
There's always
any
season
of those people
three,
could
man.
Have been.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. I was looking for the yellow contacts.
Oh, true.
Yeah, but like, you know, this harsh, like remote, you know, we've already done Snow Planet so well on Strange New Worlds. When we were talking about Jigal, we were like, let's make it different. Like, how is it going to stand out? You know, Jonathan, I think the production designer had a lot of good ideas as far as there's no guard tower, as far as making it like a volcanic planet, you know, making it sort of falling apart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
But just like, you know, this like the from prison to the surface, having the old grizzled guy just tell you how fucked up it is and what you're dealing with, you know, I channel a little of that obviously for our Clint Howard.
Yeah, how excited were you when he was cast? Man.
Oh, I was over the moon. We were looking for opportunities to cast him for a while because he's been in everything. We all love him. And Akiva actually mentioned him again. And I was like, you think, you know, we need comedic relief. We needed something to lighten up. And you know, I was like, what about, can we just make him the quirky guy? You know, he's like, he's in command, but he's also a little bit radar. He's a little bit, you know, oh, that's a grim shot. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, and I was so jazzed, and he was awesome to work with, and he got it, and he even said, he goes, what level of quirky? Because he's like, I can go really, you know, I'm known for it, but so we had it like, yo, well, yes, we want that, but it's also we want the tone to stay consistent that it's a dangerous place, you know.
No, yeah, he's like, he wrote that perfectly.
Yeah,
he goes, have you seen my DS9 episode?
Right. Yeah, the frozen kid, that's nightmare fuel.
Yeah. Yeah, I was watching this with my son, and I was like, oh, I'm glad he's asleep at this point. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I remember as a kid being terrified I'd be thrown into a cave with a bunch of random people like this.
It happened a lot in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
A lot of random
that lizard alien. Awesome.
Right.
He just had Klingon makeup, but it was green.
Right? At this point, they were like scraping the budget, right? Yeah. What extra pieces do we have?
What did TNG use? What do we got? What's sticking around? Yeah.
All the kids are watching Star Wars. We need more aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this guy.
Confiscated. Yeah. This guy kind of looks like an alien Robert Smith. He's got the hair.
There she is. I hear she was married to a pretty good musician.
Yeah, yeah, miss him.
All right,
he's on Mars. Michelle. Yeah, the Clint cameo was great, and it was actually a choice that we talked about. Like, is it the right place for him? And ultimately, we decided it was because it, like I said, the episode just needed a little bit of a chance to make you smile.
Well, he was able to bring like the quirkiness and the gravitas at the same time. Like,
right. I really feel like he's added great. That.
Yeah. He felt lived in.
Right. And also like the fact that he was sort of quirky, but then he flips anyone, when Clint Howard's serious, you're fucked. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's quirky, but he's never bumbling in the episode. Yeah. He is the right man for that job. Right. And he knows how to be a good leader. Yeah.
Did Kirk just get high? Did he smoke some weed there? Was that?
We don't know.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Some death sticks.
This is, I love that they have that buffet style 1960, like the little, it's like, we have replicators, but we're going to still.
Is the port galley lighting fixture based on this one for Strange New Worlds? Like that big
chandelier? That's a good question. I'd have to ask Jonathan. I know Jonathan based that on coral reef kind of a design. He wanted it to have a flow to it. Yeah.
What is happening?
There's an unlocked weapons cabinet in the kitchen and server racks in the kitchen. Just saying.
Let me make, like, you can't just remind.
Sure. And a 1980s data bank of servers behind her.
Yep. In the kitchen, you know, where moisture is, it's always good.
The look on Spock's face directly translates to, that was kind of Romulan.
Yeah. Like Vulcan, please. What did you just do?
Anytime your characters say, as you know,
as you know, that you know, exposition's coming or some kind of. There is definitely a Captain Pike cookbook out there. I'm sure of it. Oh. Mark brings up a great point. I think this kind of falls into like phasers do what we need them to. You know, they have settings. You dial them up, right? It was dialed to the you know, if you dial them to max, they're basically hand grenades, you know, but you dial them down and they just put someone to sleep. So you just have to, it was dialed a certain way.
It was dialed to pot. Destroy just the pot.
To fuck pot up, right? It was just right on the fuck pot up setting.
Well, that soup was not looking good. So.
They're kitchen phasers. That's how they dish stuff up. They just put the pot on the plate and then vaporize the pot.
Well, it's interesting that they kill people with the stun setting later.
Yeah.
Just that close. Know, yeah.
Continuity and track will drive you insane. I fully admit that as someone who tries to actually stick to it as much as I can. I think there's actually a great Leonard Nimoy quote about that, where he's like, if you're worried more about the continuity than the story you're watching or listening to, then, you know, you're not experiencing it maybe in the way that you should. I'm paraphrasing. He probably says it in a much better Leonard Nimoyian way, but that was the essence of it. It was like, you know, if you're worried about the start dates and not the moral, you know. Mm.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Jennifer was mentioning the knee nuts we're about to see.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Her and her friends always assumed the other gender had theirs in the elbows. I think that tracks.
Oh, yeah, that tracks for me. Oh, he turns knee on.
I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
What horrible evolutionary process put their genitals in their knees?
It makes you wonder how they procreate. Like, what sort of, what does that process look like? Everyone wants a piece of Kirk.
Looks like a lot of Vanilla Ice's dances.
Twister.
lots of knees, Mark. And elbows. Just
lots of elbows and knees.
It's so funny. Like, I remember that from this movie as a kid. Like, the pink blood, knee nuts, and that he kisses a shapeshifter.
He kisses himself is what I remember. Is Kirk fights and kisses himself.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that scene. It's pretty good.
Of course I do.
Like, to your place?
Yeah,
or?
I love this as Kirk's strategy. Like, he doesn't go in with a plan to escape. He's like, I'm just going to go in. Some hot lady's going to find me and give me an out. It's cool.
I think what's funny is by this time in Kirk's mystique, he has now like graduated to like the bad boy playboy, and it's older, right? Like at this point, he's old. But if you really watch TOS, like, yeah, there's, you know, the gag of him kissing all the different aliens and stuff. Like, but he was actually very mission focused and very like, and there was early episodes of how some women broke his heart, even, or like he chased after a girl who was married, but it's like he eventually just gets this like, oh yeah, he always got the alien, and he's always, and so here they're playing with like, you know, it's that old playboy Kirk can get the alien to do whatever he wants just by batting an eyelash.
And yeah, you're right, it is funny that like they really leaned into that more as he got older.
Yeah,
which is what I always loved about these movies, is that they are like action adventure films with like old dudes about to retire starring in them.
Yeah, right.
Like, you but don't hey, get that. No, like, nowadays,
big ups to them, right? Yeah, no, like nowadays. Well, actually,
or they're Tom Cruise and they just look younger than 16.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like, no, they're the same age, but here they're just allowed to look their age. Exactly. You know, and then now, like, you know, they could be 60s, but they got to look 40s or 50s, right?
It's mostly the Nicholas Meyers movies that focus on their age, right? Like,
that's right.
Three or four or five touch on it much? I don't think so.
No, like Wrath of Khan, that was, you know, the quintessential, you know, story was him, you know, am I too old to be out here gallivanting around space? And then something from his past comes, a mistake that he made. This is City Alpha 5. And, you know, he even uses the glasses as a gag at some point. you know, to get him out of it. And, and that movie ends with that great Peter Pan reference where you're just like, you're just as old as you feel, and, you know, take the second star to the left and straight on to morning, you know?
Well, that's this one, right?
Yeah.
Is it this one?
The second,
this one, second star to the right.
Wrath of Khan.
Straight until morning, yeah.
I just remember
that's
him saying,
oh, wow.
I thought feel that's young. This... That's what he says in Wrath of Khan.
Oh, shit. I got so, well, I got put to the point, even more to your point, this movie flat out nails the whole age thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, the Myers films are definitely a bookend, so it's easy to confuse them.
Let's see. Search for Spock.
But yeah, like I said, Wrath of Khan like deals with their age, and then he's like, oh, but I got four more adventures in me. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Look at him. He's just over his shit. Yeah. McCoy's like, this motherfucker.
We are in the worst prison in the galaxy, and you're still getting some.
McCoy being over people's shit is like my favorite flavor. Like, he used to be over Spock's shit. Like, TOS was just about how much McCoy is over Spock's shit. So I just love that. I mean, I try to sneak in somebody being annoyed with somebody as much as possible. Even though everybody on Stranger Worlds loves each other, like, if I could sneak in a McCoy moment, I'm excited.
Christian Slater?
Christian Slater. Yeah. His mom worked on the set, I think, or...
And despite what people might say, he never says, but Captain, though, I don't know. It's like everybody always says that. It's like, he doesn't say that.
I got a baboon's heart. that's all I see when I see Christian. There's so many other things. I love True Romance, and, he's a big part of that. It's one of my favorite films of all time, but I see him, and I just think I have a baboon's heart. So I'm trying to think, a Search for Spock's thematic sort of thing. That was just a straight, action adventure to a big degree. Like, you just had a premise that was, like, two people are after the same thing. You know, you have, you know, Kirk's on a rescue mission, Krug's on a you know, trying to steal the Genesis device, and the character arcs kind of like are under on top of that, but it really is just a very simple plot in a great way, and it allows all the other stuff to kind of, you know, unfold. You King on bastards, and then
I like,
you know,
that he gave Chekhov that little moment, the detective moment,
especially since they throw him under the bus later.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about that scene until it happened. Spock and McCoy almost get along in this movie. Like, they're finally almost buddies. And you're right. It's Kirk McCoy's getting annoyed with.
No, Spock's not here, so you son of, I got to make faces at you.
Oh, this is such a good sequence. Just the searching.
Yeah, the montage. Dun, do it in a montage.
Like, there's not a lot of action in this movie, but that's how much we love these characters. It's like, these are the scenes we're fine with.
But there's a lot at stake, you know, and I think if you have a lot at stake, Star Trek CSI, if you're invested in the, you know, phlebotnum, then, you know, you don't need a lot of big plot. You know, you're it's like the moves of the story. Like, are they going to find this thing? Where are these fucking gravity boots? I found one. And then the
Dax.
And it works. And then is this where they find Dax dead?
Teeny hint of a smile there. Yeah.
There's probably a fan fiction that like makes that one of the former Dax hosts.
Oh. Right?
Could be. Just could that.
Well, or
you've
just
seen enough of
DS9
to know that's not true.
I know, but fan fiction doesn't really care.
Right, exactly.
Sorry, I'm laughing at Jesse's quote. I was about to say something similar. I think George Takei was probably like, keep me away from the misogyny and I'll be in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see this alien in particular to me looks like one of the apes from Planet of the Apes.
It does. Have we seen this species on Lower Decks yet?
I don't think so.
I know. You mean the alien hobbit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, we got you red-handed, and they pan down to his fucked up feet.
I do love this moment. He's so smug.
Yeah, there's Spock. Spock's got great comedic timing, man. Don't sleep on Spock.
No.
And she, also great acting on her part. She knows damn well.
When they're interrogating somebody on the Enterprise, they bring like 30 people into the room to stand there and just watch.
Someone's busting me on the Tolkien references. I mean, I did have an episode called All Those Who Wander, so there might be some.
There you go.
I want one of these blast shield flashlights.
Heck yeah. That's a good cosplay too.
Yeah. This reminds me of Temple of Doom.
Sure, yeah.
So with the three beams, are we calling this confirmation of Predator Star Trek crossover universe?
I mean, Yes. Shit, yeah. I'm going to start writing that now. And then get laughed and turned down and fired.
Your episode had a Temple of Doom reference with Nurse Chapel holding a beating heart in her hand.
Yeah. I mean, it was hard not to have her say Kali Ma, but that might have broken the tone.
I was going
to
say, I'm pretty sure he said that on the podcast.
Yeah, he's like, grab his heart and start chanting Kali Ma. No, sorry. Yeah.
Ortega's trapped on a plane with a predator. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, man. Oh. The crossover we all
stop
want.
Stop saying ideas that you'll then sue me for writing later.
Yeah. We do have a boilerplate waiver we'll sign at the end of this. Don't worry, baby.
I mean,
you'd be shocked how little money it would cost you to use that.
The survival genre, I think, is one we haven't fully explored yet. I'll say that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there's Newt. I mean, there's this little kid going through the tunnels. Oh, and then back to Dr. Zaius.
Yeah, I was going to say. I can only hear that Simpsons musical.
Yeah, Dr. Zaius. Of course. That's why that was the first one that came to my mind for that. I mean, I could have said Aldo, but it wouldn't have been as funny. Mm-hmm. This is a big setup. Come on, smell the setup, Kirk.
Well, he does. I love his strategy of like, yeah, let's just go along with the trap. That's fine.
Yeah. Like, the trap got me closer to the surface.
Yep. And I've got the patch.
That somehow
more
is still
frozen
on.
Dead. I'm pretty sure.
Good callback to the patch with the Strange New Worlds. It was
I'm
good to
pretty
see
sure
that.
We watched. I probably watched this even in season one when we were going to do that frozen Vallejo beta. So like, what does frozen Trek look like? dead alien in the. I wonder where they shot this. Mount Shasta?
I was wondering where they shot this, yeah. Because the shot coming up where like they just walk up to the edge of the glacier.
Yeah, I'm sure it's
probably not on the volume.
Probably, yeah, no, not on the volume. It's probably somewhere actually exotic. The volume is exotic all on its own, but this is back in the days where you had to fly up people and a crew and get William Shatner and fly him out there.
Sign insurance forms and...
all kinds of shit. There was some Star Trek film that had Alaska. I'm betting it was this one.
Maybe.
I mean, we all know the Yosemite, the you know, right. Captain, wow, right. You know, Captain Kirk is climbing a mountain. Like, you know. Why is he climbing a
like,
mountain?
Like, I'm getting nervous just watching this. Like, that's slippery looking ice.
Yeah. For those of us who've walked on glaciers, man.
Yeah, that's got to be Antarctica or some shit, because that is not in your backyard.
Well, John and I grew up in Alaska. Actually was in our backyard.
Nick Glacier was in Star Trek. Yeah. They found someone found it. Okay. It was his
Jesse
Alaska.
Jesse from Alaska. Yeah.
Oh, Nick, okay.
Good call.
I mean, it's good that Jesse from Alaska is the one who found it.
Yeah. Little known fact, they actually shot this in Alaska and
Nick Glacier. No way.
I'm just I'm a volume of knowledge when it comes to this stuff.
Also, just in the classic tradition of Star Trek captains not telling anybody anything, I love he waits until now to be like, by the way, McCoy, I've got an ace up my sleeve.
I got a Viridium patch. What the fuck? You didn't tell me? You waited 2 weeks to tell me this shit? Right?
I am near death.
I was ready to die in this fucking frozen planet. I was just about to let you leave me behind, and now you tell me.
Gee, I'm so inspired.
Wanted to give you the chance to be selfless.
I just want to see how committed you were. It's been 40 years, you asshole.
You gotta want it.
Michelle was worried they're gonna kill off Bones.
There we go. Wow. Here comes that arcade graphics.
I love this Klingon.
He's too tired for this shit.
He really is. Had some bad gawk last night.
Well, he sets down a bottle to take the calls. So.
I was going to say it's so transparently a Russian.
One thing I do love about Star Trek as a franchise, and this is a good example about it, and I always hope and I think, you know, Under the Cloak of War had pieces of this, is the, like, you know, the way we do things in our current world, and they just sort of like futurize it, right? Like a listening station, mm-hmm. or, you know, even the way that the starships are boats, essentially, you know, and you know, Starfleet is, oh, there she is using the dictionary, you know, Klingon or Uhura. And
it's been a long time.
Just the it's easier to relate to it when you recognize that how, you know, the language they're using, the bosun's whistle, is relatable to like a forward operating base, you know, like I did in Under the Cloak of War. That's a forward operating base. Mm. That is a real type of base that military units have to exist in. And those are the bases where you're constantly bombarded and getting shot at. And just over the ridge is the enemy. You know what I mean?
Man, the use of incoming transport. Like, I had anxiety by the third time that went off.
Davey,
like,
that was so good.
Well done,
sir. And I pulled it back a little bit in the script. It was even more relentless because that is something MASH with the, like, the, you know, but also Combat Rescue is a reality show that was on, and it was actually it's a show, I think Discovery or maybe some other network, and it was about combat medics in, I want to say Afghanistan, and they had on their alarm, it would say Leroy Jenkins. And the first time you hear it, you laugh, right? Leroy. Yeah. And then, like, as you're watching the episodes, as you're watching, like, every time you hear that, you get tense. You're like, shit, more dead people, more hurt people. Like, oh, now this shit's going down. And I was hoping to channel that.
It worked.
Crushed it. Yeah.
And just the world building, like, I mean, beyond what the audience is feeling, like, you're just like, oh, that's what these people are dealing with all the time.
Like, yeah. It's nonstop. It's like the sounds of the helicopters, right? And once you sort of develop that motif, like, you, once you begin it, like, you can't let it stop. You have to let it keep building until it's, you know, you cut out of it, or until like that's, you know, sequence is over. Nope. No, he knows he's being
first
set
you
up.
Kiss me, now you want to kill me.
Yeah.
Blow.
I agree about Nichelle. She crushed all the stuff they gave her, always.
Yeah, I can't be mad about the inconsistent Klingon stuff, because that is a good scene.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. And that, again, it's like, you know, they were looking for a good laugh in the film. Yep, here's another one. And you go with it. Right. And stuff like that, as long as it's done good and it makes you laugh and you enjoy it, you just go with it. And you just sort of, you know, it's part of the film that you're watching, or part of the episode that you're watching.
Yeah.
And you always wanted to make out with yourself. That's so meta. Like, even before, you know, now a lot of films and TV are very meta. They're self-referential. They're breaking the third wall. But this, to have like William Shatner clowning on himself, you know, Bones all laid out. Look at him.
Bones is faking it. He's absolutely, he's fine.
Just, yeah. I am
not dealing with this.
He's like, I am not in this scene. Just lay me out. Yep. Classic Trek fighting. Do the double fists come? Where's the double fists? And there's that weird wargy thing. Aha, Klingon. Well. Damn. Now we get to fuck you up. A lot of eye injuries in the Klingon Empire.
Yeah. Makes sense. Classic. Okay, there's a moment where it's like, I can't believe that worked.
It's classic.
But yeah, I was thinking, like, this, I mean, this movie was supposed to be the swan song for this crew, right? Like, they weren't going to make any more. And yeah, it doesn't, like, nowadays it would get super meta and they would, like, you know, give everybody a big arc at the end. And it is kind of nice that they're just kind of dealing with age and they get one last have a little bittersweet moment at the end.
Well, that's what it is that you don't over-engineer a story, right? Just know the story you're telling. We're telling a story about an assassination attempt because people don't want peace. And yeah, we're familiar with the characters. We love them and they're going to have their moments. I think we try to do that as much as possible on our show is like, you know, whose episode are we going to focus on? You know, obviously Mbenga and Chapel were a big part of Under the Cloak of War. Ortegas, as a war veteran, has a piece of that. And it's like, don't over-engineer the stories there. Keep it simple. Keep it about there's a Klingon ambassador on the ship that people have history with. And also the information that we're getting about the war and how bad it was, you know. And in that, people could have their moments. Spock has beautiful moments in there. And Uhura has great moments of, you know, having her ideology and her seeing the world the way she sees it. And then having that challenge because now she's in a dinner. And the person, her friend who she loves dearly and one of the people that she cares about most in this world is having this challenging PTSD breakout. And it never resolves itself as you know, a lot of the episode doesn't resolve itself. But it gives you enough to know that, like, Uhura is now changed. You know, she began the episode viewing this guy as the peace treaty and negotiated this. And then during that dinner has to see him as someone who my friend has a really big reaction to. And, you know, that scene with number one and Pike later, when she's like, a lot of people on the crew are having issues. It's not just about the war veterans anymore. It's like the other people seeing the reactions of the war veterans, you know?
Yeah. They get influenced by the people they love.
Yeah, and, exactly. Yeah. And you almost, this dead guy. Sorry, but yeah, you almost get more in-depth insight into the character the less you try for it, you know. And I was seeing the comments how this isn't a big character driven movie. It really isn't, but you're allowed to then see the characters come out because of it, because they're not trying to they're not carrying the whole story on their back.
So that Klingon warden on the planet, that was the same guy who put his consciousness in Data.
Oh, really?
Same actor, yeah.
I was going to say, I know that face. I know that voice.
Grandpa?
Grandpa? That's right.
Aw, so Trixie.
Yeah, Code Blue. yeah, I'm a big TOS fan, and I don't know if that's apparent in my writing and in the way I talk. I did watch TNG. I was there, I watched a lot of DS9, but I think around that time I became 21 and started to go out more on Sunday nights. Yeah, I for me, like, was always, and these films were like the films that I would watch as a kid in the theaters. So this crew and this era is for me like the Trek that I always think of when I think Star Trek. And he is, being creepy.
This looks like the Enterprise D medbay redressed.
Probably. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they were using all them sets.
It's only fair. They use so much of their stuff. Sets and props and TNG.
Yeah. Is this where he fucks her up with the mind meld thing?
That's on the bridge. On the bridge in front of like 20 people again.
Yeah, it's just ranking her down, right?
Yeah.
Shatner's like, wait till she sees my face. Wait till she sees my face.
Yeah, don't fuck it up. There he goes.
Oh, shit.
Dang, there's that emotion. There's that Spock emotion.
Yeah.
And there's McCoy with his hobo makeup.
One Vulcan on the ship, and you're the traitor? God damn it.
Yeah. You cannot prove anything.
So smug. Love the Monster Maroons.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't gotten this far without talking about
that. I have an affinity for the little useless flap that they all have on these things.
her color's red. Why is her color red? Is that a rank thing?
Must be rank.
Yeah.
I know McCoy, a couple times in that movie, he has fun tearing it open.
Oh, right. I agree, Michelle. I remember watching this and going like, oh, and especially on a rewatch, you're like, oh, that is some non-consensual invasions of the mind.
Oh, yeah.
They killed your son.
Kirk must just smell right now.
He just looks like it, right? He's on a bender on Ruapenthe. Didn't shower.
Not everybody keeps his BO in the same place.
Yeah. So this little thing with the conspiring, like people that are, we kind of tapped into this for the premiere, the Broken Circle, the idea that like there's people who fundamentally do not want these two factions to be at peace because it's more profitable or more honorable or whatever it is. They just don't like this idea. And so they would rather work against it. And I think it's actually a really interesting allegory for a lot of our, you know, United States politics, for like, there are people that have a more vested interest in discourse than actually trying to get government to work. Right. And so the politics of getting two sides to hate each other, of entrenching yourself in ideology versus like actually reaching out and saying, hey, we have more in common than we have difference, which is a very fundamental actual Trek way of seeing the world. So it's great to like play in the opposing point of view and then point out how futile and how pointless it is to actually have that sort of fatalist point of view.
Yeah, we were talking about the plot of
the sonic shower. I laughed at the chat, but what were you saying about the...
Oh, just that the plot of Broken Circle felt very cinematic. It felt like almost like a Strange New Worlds the movie kind of plot.
I mean, I have to say we were all there and we were like, you know, stealing the Enterprise, and, you know, it was like we were tapping into the film franchise like hardcore, and mm-hmm. also like every act was almost its own reel of, like you say, it was like the stealing the Enterprise sequence. It was the like Law and Undercover sequence. It was the like Mbenga and Chapel, you know, behind enemy lines. And then, you know, then it all comes together, you know, with the Ortegas flying. And, you know, it was a showcase of just how great everyone is.
Speaking of, this is a showcase of the actors because, like, they're doing this alien thing. The camera's not, I mean, there's no special effects. The camera's just circling them. The music is kind of subtly there, but, I mean, it's Kim Cattrall's performance that sells.
Her control of tears.
Look at that.
She's killing it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you got to cut to Dugan's reaction.
Yeah, all the reactions. Uhura's got one coming up, I think.
Yeah, then she's just like trembling. I just basically fucked her brain up. I made her a vegetable.
Don't betray Spock.
Don't piss Spock off, man. That guy.
Such a good line.
I've been dead before. Straight up, fuck it. Let's put our bona fides on the table. There he is. Just happy not to be on the same set as you, Will. I don't know that for sure. I'm just. Yeah. Near the Romulan border. I love how everyone just has each other's backs, right? Which is something mm-hmm. I definitely lean into. It's like, there's the Federation and the Starfleet, and we are all, you know, going to abide by those rules. But also, these are the people that I've survived how many skirmishes with and how many fucking battles. And some of us have died and come back, and some of us have been on the, you know, death's door, like the people, and you get that in a lot of the combat books that you read. It becomes about the person next to you. It becomes about the people that you serve with. It becomes about the people that saved your life. And so it's hard to separate yourself from that immediate connection and then the ideal or the rules or the way that you're supposed to go. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I mean, even that moment with Pike where he's like, look, even if you did do it, like, we could work this out.
Right. Like, he's trying to give him... Pike's trying to see some daylight, right? Because there's a gut feeling that Pike has that I don't have the full story. I know you well enough to know I don't have the full story. I think Mbenga is like, you know, I appreciate that you're trying to give me this out, but also if I told you the full story, you couldn't understand it. You know, mm-hmm. That's kind of that scene, and that's why it's so, and they nailed that so great, and it was awesome to see them just come in and you know, to watch them really understand the material and just give it their all was great. And I think that scene actually came out of a lot of conversations about what is it that we're trying to really say with, you know, that I don't think that scene was in the original drafts. It was something that came out of conversations with Akiva, with Henry, with Alex, you know, and Anson. Everyone got involved because we knew that we were really like, how do we nail what we're trying to say? And then you know, I took all of that in and just, I think it was like over a weekend, wrote that scene and added it to the script, and I sent it to Henry and Akiva, and they were like, yeah, this is it, you know, this is what the episode needed. And I was like, great, cool, let's shoot it. You know.
Yeah, that's his resurrection robe, right, Jesse?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Or that's from right before he shows back up in Wrath of Khan. Is that the one he's wearing on Vulcan?
Oh, when he goes to Kalinar? I think so.
Okay.
This is I'm above your shit
hood,
robe,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also when they resurrect him, and he's just like,
Yeah, because that's what he's swimming with the whales in.
Oh, you're totally right. That's the Power Rangers Command Center.
It is the Power Rangers.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely, Michelle. I think Una's scene with Pike is huge, and also was always there because we knew that she was sort of the yin to his yang, and mm-hmm. and even in the dinner scene, they are experiencing the same events, but she's processing them through decorum, and he's processing them through like the people I know and who's really right and wrong. And then they kind of switch positions. And and so like the scene with Mbenga becomes like the second part of like Pike's lessons, basically. Mm-hmm. And so Una starts it off for him, and then Mbenga gets to land it.
Yeah, we all really like the Una scene because it's one of the few opportunities you get to see her in that role of first officer, being right. Like, I'm bringing you the, you know, I'm your go-between between the crew and the captain.
Exactly, and that's what a good lieutenant is, right? It's I am like the I am the voice of the captain, but I'm also the ear of the crew, right? And so, and I have to tell the captain when I don't agree with him, but I never do it around everybody. Like when I'm in front of the captain, I am the authoritarian. I am putting out his commands. I am, you know, have the captain's back. I will even dress people down. But it was just the captain and me. It's like, all right, you know what? Ortega's had a point, and you know, I would never tell her that, but what are we going to do here?
Yeah, that must have been a real trick to pull off, because you've got Pike not being in the wrong per se, but like, you know, he's making some not great decisions. He's seeing things not the way the audience is seeing, but he still comes across as Pike, as the space daddy we all know and trust and would follow into the galaxy.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I really wanted to do as much as possible with that. I think we all did in the writer's room. We wanted to really make everybody have a point. Like you want to agree with everybody. And that's what makes peace and war so hard and so messy. Like at some point you have to pick a side, right? And so who do you agree with? Where do you land? But everyone's point is valid, and everyone is fighting for what they believe in, and everyone is passionate about what they believe in. And there was a little bit about, for me, definitely the whole military actions, the war that's happening in Ukraine, and how those are civilians. Those are people's homes. They're under attack. And how do we, as we're not involved, but we're can influence world politics, like how do we feel about that? Where do we land on that?
Space Daddy sounds different than Space Dad. I should have just said Space Dad. Space Daddy has a slightly different intonation.
I mean, either one, really. Space Daddy, you know.
One man's space dad is another man's space daddy.
Yeah.
This is such a fun cat and mouse scene.
Yeah. I love anytime it's ship to ship and it's mano a mano. Like, that's now I'm leaning in. Like, now you get to have the fun, right? This is the whole, you know, this is Memento Mori. This is, you know, Balance of Terror. This is, you know, all of that. Wrath of Khan. Like, the ship to the submarine ship to ship stuff, I'm like, you know, that's like popcorn.
Did you watch Wrath of Khan before writing Memento Mori?
Oh, yeah. Wrath of Khan, Balance of Terror, Run Silent, Run Deep, a couple other 1940s and 50s submarine movies. Because, yeah, I mean, I was influenced by Balance of Terror and Wrath of Khan, but I was also like, what were those guys influenced by, right? What is the writer's room writing Star Trek? What are they watching? What are their experiences? And that's why I went to Run Silent, Run Deep, and I wanted to just experience and read, you know, a little bit of the theater of war in the Pacific, and was like, okay. And then, you know, ultimately just sort of my spin on it, our spin on it, I should say. I cannot take all credit for, even though my name is on the title page, and I have the, I'm typing with my fingers, like, you know, writing is a group sport.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever wish you were like 60 years older and you got to write all this stuff? Like, the first person to be like, hey, what if it's like two submarines facing off? Like, oh, that's such a good idea.
I don't know. I'm glad to rip off the geniuses that they are. You know what I mean? I don't know if I would have, you know, I think it'd be a lot of pressure to be the first one. But also, like I said, you know, my approach to it is, I'm sure they were like, you know, oh, I'm going to rip off Master and Commander or Mutiny on the Bounty or, you know, Run Silent, Run Deep. Like, they weren't the first ones, really. Mm-hmm. But they understood, like, there's a story that's been told. Now we get to tell it in space. And how do we do our version of it? That's kind of like the fun that I get to have. Like, plenty of Trek stories have been told, plenty of other sci-fi stories have been told, and there's better people doing it. I just get to do my version, being influenced by these things.
Yeah, Michelle points out McCoy's fascinating to Spock, which is like, yeah, that's the moment. Oh, these two have finally become friends. Like, this is the 30-year arc we've been watching with
right.
these two.
This is one for the hardcores. They know he's throwing it back at him.
I mean, we do have to acknowledge Chang is just a huge theater nerd with all the Shakespeare references.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forget when they're beaming away, like, he adds one more and like, yeah, he's just that obnoxious guy who's like, look, oh, yeah, we get it. You've
I'm
read Shakespeare.
One-liners.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This.
Yeah, yeah. That's the dogs of war!
Like, what is it with, like, crazy Klingons quoting things as they attack Kirk?
Yeah. It's so good. We're fools for it, though. We eat it up. And there's always a Klingon who wants Kirk and the whole of the Enterprise on their mantle or whatever, you know?
Quoting human literature.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there goes the...
That shot.
Ready room, yep.
That one stuck with me.
And I'm also a glutton for let's fuck up the ship, you know, the beautiful, pristine ship.
Yes. But thank you so much that after the ship was fucked up in Memento Mori, the next episode had them fixing it. Like,
yeah,
right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, you got it. That's what we endeavor to do. A little bit of the, like, you know, if you watched it on week two, it still happened when you watched week eight. You know what I mean? On Supernatural, they would call it Castnesia, right? Like, there'd be an episode where you had this big interaction with Castiel. And then the next episode, he'd just be gone, but we'd never mention where he was or what he was doing. And you want to avoid that. You want to have some continuity of understanding, oh, there goes the silly magnetic, we can find you even though you're cloak torpedo. And then the realization that it's going right up the tailpipe. To be. There he goes.
Target that explosion of fire. Love that line. Yeah. Love it.
He nails it too.
Well, the early... Yeah, earlier when he's like, then shake her apart.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. He's a good captain.
Yeah. This is a great era for one-liners, too. This whole, you know, 80s to 90s. Oh, there's a sniper. Vulcan sniper. I'm surprised these guys weren't lit up with phasers.
Yeah, I love that they brought the hardcore Sulu captain aspect to Sulu, yeah, the reboots.
Out of the way. This is a really easy peace treaty to infiltrate.
Yeah.
Like, just straight up, you're going to just tackle the president. Like, look at him go.
Why did
through.
He jump off Kirk?
A springboard from special effects. Protect the chancellor.
I mean, they did choose the universe's worst assassin. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. You're in on it, too.
That's a little dumb for Spock to say. Arrest yourself.
That's probably why he did it off camera. They're like, just do this line in voiceover, please.
Yes,
I really God. He kicked that line. Door down. He
He's
didn't
like,
open
look,
it.
Nicholas, I'll say the line in a VO session, but I don't want it on camera.
Engineer Mark is excited that the engineer got to take out the sniper.
I was going to say, shout out to our very own Engineer
Mark. Was that Odo?
That's right.
It was Odo. So when you watch the deleted scenes, it's really confusing when that Klingon isn't a Klingon.
Oh, here comes a speech. Love a good Shatner speech. Name the movie. There it is.
Point.
I should have wrote a speech for Pike that says many things happen under the cloak of war. That the title of the episode, I'm sure people can look it up, is actually a quote from Einstein. And if you look up the full quote, it's kind of slow clap. Yep. it is a total like spoiler almost, because the full quote is killing under the cloak of war is still equates to murder, you know. Oh. And so
like that.
And so there's a little bit of are the actions that these people are doing, no matter the circumstances, if you're taking someone else's life, like that is essentially a murder. The 10-foot dude in the background. Clap it. There it is. They're like, we just need this shot. Just need it for the fans.
Sarek is up there like, why am I clapping?
Yeah.
I'm not a clapper.
I hate clapping.
Can you make me the dead Romulan again?
The things I do as an ambassador.
I'm going to have Vulcan and Alzheimer's at some point. So just, you know.
He's got another wife to get through before then.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
Man, no justice for Amanda there.
Maybe that's why he likes Earth women, because then he gets to get married like four times in his life.
They're always younger than him, too.
Yeah. Sarek is Matthew McConaughey.
Napoleon Dynamite's brother is in Starfleet.
Sarek's the Vulcan Matt McConaughey. Well.
Be a lot more logical if you did.
Yeah. That was good. That's a good Matthew. Oh, you're right. Here's the Peter Pan reference.
Yeah.
Man, I fucked up my Nicholas Meyers movie.
I like the sentiment, but is the Enterprise really in condition to just go for a joyride right now?
I mean, was it when they stole it? I mean, it was all jacked up. One shot from a, you know.
They were desperate then.
You are part human. Yes. Go to hell.
And then we get that great parallel from Data in First Contact. Where he's like, to hell with our orders.
Right. Mm-hmm. There it is. I also love Peter Pan ripoff a lot from that. Right. And straight on till morning.
Oh, yeah. He did it. He did the Peter Pan.
Yeah. Like, you're right. This could have been the last movie for them and would have been like, what an awesome send off. Like, this is it, right? They're still out there in space exploring and eternally young. And you can't take that from them. And she's wearing the short skirt. Way to go, Uhura.
And then Kirk goes, as soon as we find Captain Hook, and they're like, oh, no, let's go back to space.
Space talk.
He's a little far with the metaphor.
He just crows like a rooster.
He's lost it.
The empty chair for Sulu, yeah. He's Bogo.
Wow. Three times in the movie.
Where no one.
I was
going
to say the third time.
Yeah. You just, in case you missed the poster, the movie is called Undiscovered Country, y'all. No man, no one has gone.
Dun, 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 oh, God, dun, they got blown up in a supernova.
And you will die with a Nexus wave in a really unceremonious way.
Oh, no, quick. It wants us to watch Final Frontier next.
The Final Frontier.
Paramount. Wait,
isn't that the one before this one? I'm confused. I'll watch Cyborg, but not, maybe not tonight. Don't ruin it. Signatures.
These are the direct inspiration for why they did the signatures at the end of Endgame.
Ah.
Oh.
Yeah, I meant to go check Walter Koenig because I just got his
signature. I'm surprised Lower Decks hasn't done something with this.
I'd like welcome Steve to the chat during the end credits of the movie.
Yeah, nice, buddy.
You made it.
Good to have
you're
Steve.
A patron. You'll get the whole thing. It's fine.
One influence for Under the Cloak of War, I was wondering, and I don't know if it would be as much in the writing, but I was definitely getting like James Cameron vibes from the Future War. Was that...
In Under the Cloak of War? Or?
Yeah. Yeah.
James Cameron, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I did that intentionally, but like, I obviously watched and loved James Cameron movies, you know.
It might have been more with the production design too, just the lasers and the...
Well, Space Marines, you know, Aliens, yeah. Obviously, clearly I've seen that movie as we all have. And I think there was conversation, there was a temp track of the combat zone that was like, artillery fire, and it was great and it was effective with the visual, but there was a conversation about like, this is Star Trek, this is not Vietnam, and so we cannot, like, even though it looks visually like strafing artillery fire, like, it still has to be lasers, it still has to be space, it still has to be sci-fi. And I think that's where you get into the sort of that James Cameron Space Marine-ness of it all, but yeah. Like little things like that, I think we're all trying to always keep track of the details and how much is it is like analog that we understand it from our world, and how much of it is like future and going to give us that like real sense of another place, another strange new world, as you would. Hey. I could do it too, William Shatner. when you're thinking about strange new worlds, you really want them to have their own sound. It's my best Shatner Kirk. It's not that great.
Man. Thank you, David, for being here.
Oh, like, of course, man.
This was great.
So I mean, cool. Yeah.
This was fun. I love doing this. I thank you guys for watching the show, and thank you for inviting me on and asking me to do this. And this was actually kind of cool to go back and watch this again as a fan. I once a year try to go through all of these movies, and then obviously when I'm writing an episode, I'll go through one specifically. And it is fun. Like, I'm watching this, and I'm like, there's so much I subconsciously tap into plot wise or, you know, story wise. And I'm like, oh yeah, we did do that. Or, oh, we did talk about maybe doing that. And maybe some of this will come up later. I don't know. And it's just kind of cool how I forget how much these films in particular influence a lot of what I get to do.
Well, and I got to say, on behalf of the part of the fandom that is always out there swinging the sword of, don't tell me these writers don't care about what they're doing and that they don't know their stuff. Like, man, you just gave me so much ammunition. Like, the depth that you provided on your process, as well as just your base level knowledge of Trek. Like, I'm so glad to have somebody of your caliber working on Strange New Worlds, because it really shows.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I don't know jack shit, let's be honest. But, like, I thank you for saying that I do. No, I won't diminish the compliment with silliness. I thank you for saying that. I really do. I love this franchise. Look, I grew up watching it with my dad at midnight, you know, on the re-airs. And there's an affinity that I have because it was some of the only time that I got to spend with him, you know. And so I was there watching those original episodes out of order because they were being syndicated and they were just on at midnight. And, but it didn't matter that they were out of order. It just was, you know, you were there for the story of the week. And then when these movies came out, like, I was there in the movie theater, like Wrath of Khan was the first movie I saw. I was 6 years old. It was a double feature, Wrath of Khan and one of the Friday the 13th movies, if you could believe that. Should not have been watching that, but I was.
That's a hell of a double feature.
My sister was older. She was a preteen, and she was like, you know, 12, I think, and she wanted to go see these, and she had to watch me, and so I went, and I was like, hey, these are the characters that I get to watch with my dad, but now they're on the big screen, and so after that, every time a Star Trek movie came out, I was watching it, and it's in my DNA. I love all the star franchises and the space stuff that we all grew up on, and you know, all the comic book. We're in that sort of renaissance of anything cool and nerddom is being, you know, put on out there for us. But this, for me, has always been just the personal place that I want to be in, and so yeah, it's meaningful for me to be able to write these stories.
Special thanks to the Alaska Film Commission right there. I think the end credits were shorter than the opening credits.
I was going to say, yeah, like this was the era where you're like, sit here and fucking hear a score for 5 minutes as you see names pop up one at a time and get your popcorn and you'll like it.
There's I did. I like this. Thank you again.
Thank you guys again. This was awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, patrons, for being here. Thank you, Davey, for sharing with us and making our first stream of thought a huge success. So
it's we've put out awesome to some hear. Others. Yeah. I think Onitra has some ideas for what she might want to watch.
Awesome. I love Onitra. She's fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We had a great time with her. Can't wait to get her back on. And Bernadette Croft.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's
hoping you'll get a lot of insight. Her to watch Labyrinth with us, but whatever she
can. Oh, that would be a great one. Yeah, right? I want to see what Bernard has to say about that. I can't wait to learn from both of them when they see the insights that they provide.
All right, guys, I'm just going to call it. That was an unmitigated success. Like, there was nothing about that stream that I was frustrated with. Davey seemed to have a really good time. Again, thank you to all the patrons that showed up in the chat. You guys provided great comments and questions. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm really excited for Stream of Thought episodes going forward, you guys.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, you know, the question of, like, what was the first movie we watched in theaters? Like, yes, that's kind of, like, stuff I wouldn't have thought to bring, but it's a great conversation started with these folks. Yeah, you know, it was kind of experimental. I mean, I don't want to take... you know, pat ourselves too much on the back, but you know, it's not something I'd seen before, and so even trying to explain it to Davey in the email was a little wonky, but he 100% understood the assignment.
Yeah, absolutely. He did a great job. It was really fun to see him, like you said, geek out about the movie, but also the way he interacted with our patrons and just mm-hmm. really enjoyed talking about his craft and what he took from the movie, borrowed, stole, and just what was not related to the movie.
As our friend Kay Hanley said in her songwriting interview for Subspace Rhapsody, write a word, take a third.
As she also said, all killer, no filler. And I feel like that's what this was.
Yeah, absolutely.
There were a few moments right before we started where I was like, this could go really poorly. Like there's a lot of moving parts, like things could break, people might not be able to find the link, you know, but it actually ended up just being a ton of fun. And honestly, it kind of felt like making an episode of Mystery Science Theater with one of the people who's like going to make the next episode of Mystery Science Theater. Like it was really, really cool. I'm very glad that we got to do that. And again, that's all because of patrons like you. So thank you so much. And if you're not a patron, you may notice that you're listening to this anyway. That's because we really don't want to keep stuff like this from you. We think this is a lot of fun and we feel like as many people should have access to it as possible. So that's why we're dropping it into the regular feed.
Yeah. And if you're not a patron, you are missing our Lower Decks Season 4 coverage that is for patrons only, and there's some pretty fun other stuff on there. A lot of videos on our Patreon channel, a couple of extra bonus episodes, and lots of good content. We just did a big sticker and pin mailing to a bunch of our patrons, so they should have those adorning their coffee mugs, computers, office doors, windshields, you know, wherever. Our stickers go well anywhere.
And we've got more giveaways coming up, so keep your eyes peeled and make sure you're following the show on social media wherever you want at Open Pike.
And go ahead and find me over at GreenShirt87.
And you can get everything you need for Open Pike Night all in one place at openpike.com.
That's right. Well, be sure to tip your servers. Be sure to clean up after yourselves. Be sure to watch out for another episode. Listen out for another episode of Stream of Thought. Depends if we are patron or not. You can go anywhere you want, but you can't stay here.